Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. Later on the program, we'll be talking about the big Tuesday primaries. Six states holding very important primary elections, including Michigan. But we begin with the latest on coronavirus locally. With us, L.A. County Department of Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer. Thank you for joining us again. Let's start first with the details. How many confirmed cases do we have? Yesterday, I know you announced we have the first community spread case of the virus. Where do we stand?
Sure. Thank you so much, Larry. And again, I appreciate this opportunity to give an update. So we have 16 confirmed cases here in LA County. I do want to let everyone know, you know, we anticipate every day moving forward, we will be confirming additional cases. We generally try to get that information out around 12 noon every day. Obviously, we have to wait until we get lab confirmation and then until we complete enough of an investigation to be able to give good information to the general public. But I do want people to know, given that there's more community spread in the rest of the United States as well as the rest of the world, and given that we had, as you noted, our first case of a person for whom we could not identify a source of exposure, that's what we call community spread, we anticipate that there are more people here in LA County who may be infectious and therefore over time are going to be likely to spread this disease to others. I do want to remind folks that, you know, our basic messages haven't changed in terms of people needing to stay home when they're sick, even with mild illness. While we have increased test capacity here in LA County, we don't have test capacity that allows every single person to be tested, which means if you're sick, you should assume you're infectious with some agent that you could give somebody else, some bug that can be sent to somebody else. So sick people need to still stay home. We're also sort of increasing our guidance to people who are at higher risk for serious disease if they should, in fact, become infected with COVID-19. And those are people with underlying health conditions. That could be somebody who has cancer, who has diabetes, who has asthma, who has an immune system that is weakened. We also are concerned about people who are elderly. We know that the average age across the world at which people are more likely to die of novel coronavirus, of COVID-19 disease, is in fact 80, which means that as people get older, their risk increases for serious illness and the unfortunate event of having some people that who are dying from COVID-19. So again, we want to make sure we're protecting our elderly and pregnant women. And for that group of people, we're now recommending that they should avoid all non-essential travel, that they should avoid going to large public gatherings, they should avoid going to large public events, they should stay away from theaters as much as possible to protect themselves. As there's more virus that may be circulating in our community, people who are at highest risk of really contracting serious illness need to take some protections. Starting tomorrow, we will be visiting with a team of technical assistance experts, all of the nursing homes and all of the long-term care facilities in LA County to make sure that they have what they need to both protect their employees and, most importantly, to protect their guests who are already many are in fragile health conditions.
Dr. Ferrer, you said pregnant women should avoid any sorts of public events. Was there another group you mentioned with pregnant women?
Sure. It's pregnant women, people with underlying health conditions, and people who are elderly.
Okay. Should avoid going out. And so is shopping at the supermarket a potential risk? Or
consider shopping at the supermarket an event where you have a lot of exposure with people? I mean, you're not shopping and you're not crowded in an aisle where people for 10 minutes are in your face potentially coughing, as they might be at a theater or a public event where you're all sitting together and in a crowded situation.
And it's difficult to move, yeah.
Create distance between yourself and other people.
I also wanted to mention, you said 16 Los Angeles County cases. That's within your jurisdiction. There are the three Long Beach cases, Long Beach with its own public health department. So we should mention that as well.
Yes, and I appreciate you reminding me. There are 19 cases in L.A. County that we've reported and three that have been reported by the Long Beach Health Department. And just so people know, we work very closely together. It's just jurisdiction matters here because when you have positive cases, you're often issuing isolation and quarantine orders, and those orders would be handled by the Long Beach Public Health Department for Long Beach residents.
We've had a couple of healthcare workers at urgent care centers say they don't have access to the test collection kits to be able to send off and have people tested. So again, who does have those kits if someone needs to be tested?
You know, there are various provider offices that already have those and medical facilities that have those. We don't have a list of who has the capacity to do that testing. It's a matter of having trained staff and in some situations having a room where it's appropriate to collect those specimens and then having, of course, the ability to have the specimen kits that you need to collect the specimens. And many places, unfortunately, many providers, particularly providers who are in solo practices or small group practices, are not set up for taking these specimens. But I want to assure you that providers know where they can send their patients.
Okay.
To get tested. So it's not, it's I can't give you the whole list. It's a long list.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can get tested, but providers who don't have capacity to test,
right,
either call us because they have a dedicated line to reach us and we'll tell them, or they already know where to send patients.
Thank you so much, Barbara Ferrer. We appreciate your joining us. Look forward to it tomorrow. She's director, Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. Just want to update you on what's going on with public events. You've probably been hearing that many communities have canceled St. Patrick's Day festivities or other public gatherings. Professional sports leagues are considering what to do with their crowds. At this point, we haven't had games scheduled with no crowds whatsoever. But the major sports leagues made a joint announcement last night that they would not have visitors in the locker room or clubhouses, that all interviews would be done instead outside of those areas to limit the exposure of the athletes to those who might be ill without knowing it. They're also with the Coachella Music Festival that fans eagerly await at this point. There are reports the organizers are considering whether they can hold that at the regular time or will need to postpone till later in the year. There have been international sporting events played before empty stadiums with the games simply televised, no live fans, and there have been others canceled outright. The Ivy League announced this morning it's canceling its league men's and women's basketball tournaments and awarding the NCAA automatic qualifying to the tournaments to the top regular season finishers in the respective women's and men's Ivy Leagues. Joining us now to talk about the latest on COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, is Dr. David Eisenman, professor of medicine and public health at UCLA. He directs the university's Center for Public Health and Disasters. Dr. Eisenman, we appreciate your being with us today. I'd like to take some listener calls with questions for you as well. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866 866-893-5722. First of all, your top-of-mind thoughts about what we're seeing from the spread of coronavirus in the U.S.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I think it's really important to emphasize what our health commissioner just said, which is that we should expect to see more cases every day. I think it's really important, too, that we have this clear, credible, and consistent information from her coming every day at noon, the announcement from the local health department about this. So we should expect to see disruptions multiply as the cases increase. This is an exponential growth. In the beginning, you see one case, then two, then four, then 16, and it doesn't really seem like much. But if you remember your curves of exponents from high school math, you know, dare I say, it takes off at that point. 256, 6,000. And that's the nature of exponential growth, as it seems quite small in the beginning, and then it explodes. So we all need to start to mentally prepare and listen to our health commissioners about what we can do to reduce transmission in the community.
Are you taking any solace in the rate of spread in China seeming to slow?
It is good news. It shows that the curve of transmission can be bent, that if we have rigorous social distancing and people adhere to that, that we can change the rate of people getting infected and the number of people getting sick. And that's really good public health.
We're seeing some universities go to online classes for the foreseeable future. Both of the major Bay Area universities, Stanford and Cal, have done that. Columbia has done it. And there have been several others that have followed suit. What is the threshold for a college or university making a decision to do that? Is that just an abundance of caution or more than that?
I think it differs between each university. I guarantee that each university is meeting daily to get an update on cases in the community, to understand what's the situation and to see if they need to change their status. Some may be changing, maybe going to online teaching because there's been a case among a worker or a student. Or others are making this decision because there are cases in the community. So Columbia and Yeshiva University in New York are near the epicenters of the New York outbreak. Why UC Berkeley chose, that's probably a similar reason, but I can't say. I'm not privileged to that. I know that all the universities are thinking about reducing the effect on their student body, on their staff, and having different triggers, but all very informed triggers for that decision.
I don't know if you've seen this news that has just broken, but in the community of New Rochelle, which is just outside New York City, a one-mile containment zone is going to limit gatherings there. This, the New York Times is reporting. Can you tell us a little bit about what a containment zone is and when public officials might call for that?
I haven't seen that. I'm not sure if that means that they are quarantining people within that zone or if they're doing something called a cordon sanitaire, which is what has been going on in Italy, where people are not allowed to travel in and out. So I haven't seen the article.
Yeah, and
I
don't
talk
yeah.
about. We often mix up the term quarantine and cordon sanitaire, and they're different.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on this story and see what specifically they're talking about, because they use that term that certainly I'm not familiar with, and we'll see if we get more specifics on what's happening there. We're talking with Dr. David Eisenman, professor of medicine and public health at UCLA. So this is an opportunity for you to ask him specific questions about COVID-19. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Denise in Tarzana says, I have friends in Italy who are locked in, seeing how China and South Korea have gone to extremes of quarantining residents. Do you see mass quarantines as a viable solution? Dr. Eisenman?
There's a lot of debate about this among professionals in the public health community. It seems to have worked in China. The WHO says that it made a big difference, and we can see that in the bending of the curve, the lower number of new cases every day in China. It is early to say whether it's going to work in northern Italy and whether it's going to work in Italy. And it's even a question of feasibility in the United States. So we do know that social distancing works, limiting mass gatherings, telling people to work from home, reducing travel. Those are evidence-based practices that we know do work across all kinds of epidemics. But the scale of what has been done in China and the scale of what is being done in Italy has never been done before in the modern era of epidemics. So it's really, we are all trying to learn whether they work or not.
Tony in Playa Vista says, what makes this coronavirus different from other outbreaks like H1N1 or SARS? Is it the way that COVID-19 spreads? I'm curious how we got past those outbreaks, Tony said, but this one is such a big deal.
Well, it is different. They have different levels of lethality for number one. SARS, which I think the questioner asked about, was very lethal, but it wasn't as easily. It was easily contained, and we were able to stop the spread in the community and get rid of it. H1N1, we actually had a outbreak of it, then it died away in the summer, and then it came back in the fall, and we still have outbreaks of H1N1, but they're very small, so it's never gone away. But we are able to immunize against it, and we are able to keep it from being a major epidemic.
We're talking with UCLA Professor of Medicine and Public Health, Dr. David Eisenman. He's a director of the University Center for Public Health and Disasters. He's kindly come on to answer questions and to talk about COVID-19. We're at 866-893-KPCC. Airlines reporting some difficult financial news. Southwest Airlines CEO Gary Kelly says COVID-19 might do more economic damage to airlines than the 2001 terror attacks did. Delta Airlines also announced today travel demand has fallen so badly over the past week, it expects a third of its seats to be empty this month on flights within the U.S. The stock market has rebounded somewhat today. So there's some positive news in this. We'll continue with more of your calls and questions at 866-893-5722. You're listening to Air Talk. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle with public health expert Dr. David Eisenman. He's professor of medicine and public health at UCLA. Their classes are still as scheduled. USC, as you probably have heard, over the next 3 days doing a test of online-only classes to see how that's going. We're at 866-893-KPCC. Adrian in Los Feliz asks a question that many people have. She has a flight to France later this month, wondering if at this point she should cancel the trip. Dr. Eisenman, for people who are traveling to Europe or to Asia, should they consider canceling at this point?
Well, this is a question I get a lot of, and common sense says that the travel is increased risk. We can't say for sure which countries are going to be risky to go to in a month. We also know that as you go to another country, there may be travel bans or quarantines imposed when you return. So we really, at this point, say that you're taking a risk with international travel.
Yeah, because that would be a bummer, Adrian, if you went to France and then for whatever reason there was a quarantine, you couldn't come back, even if you were completely well and hadn't been exposed. It could certainly be disruptive for your life. Isaac in Pasadena says, I have a small office in downtown Los Angeles that I manage, about 20 people. At what point should I have everybody work from home? Again, it's a question small business owners who don't have to be open to interact with customers face-to-face, what should they consider when making that call, doctor?
Well, the first thing is to keep up to date with the County Department of Public Health recommendations each day. At the point in which they formally request that kind of social distancing, that's the time to adhere to that recommendation. But before that, there's nothing wrong with starting to implement small practices along that way. So as much as possible, you may want to stagger people coming in, have those people who can work from home work from home some days, if not all days. You know, it doesn't have to be 100% effective to be effective to social distancing, that is. So start to practice those, start to get the bugs out of the system, and start to perfect that and start to get used to it and adapt to it.
We have Lynn in West Los Angeles asking about elective surgery specifically. I guess she has surgery scheduled at your medical center there at UCLA, wondering if it's best to postpone, if it's non-emergency, non-essential surgery, or to go ahead and have it. What do you think?
I think the first thing to do is to talk to your surgeon and to find out what they would advise. In general, the hospitals are still operating under routine circumstances, taking elective surgeries, doing elective admissions, and there's no problem in going to the hospital.
All right. We have Brandon in downtown Los Angeles. Brandon, you're on Air Talk. Your question for Dr. Eisenman.
Yeah, Dr. Eisenman. So I'm an event planner in LA. I do events throughout the city, typically ranging in attendance sizes from like 50 to 200, 300. And I'm noticing that with these events that are coming up, people, you know, attendees are asking for refunds. Some vendors are pulling out, but more importantly, vendors are reaching out to me for guidance, whether they should continue to participate, whether they should cancel their plans. And the only sort of guidance I've seen from CDC is that organizers, large of groups attending, attracting large people, should consider canceling or modifying. What is a good threshold for a large number of people, and you know, what should I be thinking about doing?
Brandon, thanks for the question.
That's a great question. There is no single threshold that has any factual basis behind it. For instance, today, Santa Clara declared gatherings of 1,000 or more as forbidden. Well, not probably a better word for that. Where the 1,000 number came from is not clear to me. So you really have to make a decision. We're seeing cancellations of conferences of a couple hundred, and certainly cancellations of conferences of a couple thousands.
And sometimes the issue gets pushed by just attendee cancellations. I think, you know, with South by Southwest in Austin, one of the issues before the mayor of Austin said the event should be canceled was that there were a lot of cancellations of people who were going to go, you know, filmmakers, musicians and the like, who were pulling out. And so then you get to the financial issue of that. If you're going to have, you know, the attractions pulling out of the event, and that's going to depress tickets further, it becomes sort of a, you know, cyclical event. It feeds on itself. Then you have to figure out about whether it's worthwhile to hold the event after all. Brandon, we wish you the best with that. Obviously, this is very tough for your business as an event planner. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Michael in downtown Los Angeles, you're on with UCLA physician and professor Dr. David Eisenman.
So taking my call, my question is for healthcare providers. There does not seem to be any guidance or any particular recommendations on how to screen patients, who to let in our offices, who to send to the emergency room. I wanted to get your expert's opinion on that, as in we are in the front lines of this whole epidemic, and we need more guidance. We need more guidelines.
What kind of a clinic are you at, Michael?
Other than what everybody knows how to screen people, what are the expert recommendations?
Michael, what kind of clinic are you at?
Family practice clinic.
A family practice. Okay, thank you. Dr. Eisenman?
Yes. So, Michael, there are recommendations at the CDC website for clinicians on how to think about who needs testing. In general, tests are unfortunately still limited in Los Angeles and only available through a certain number of centers and labs. So I know that you can't screen in the usual sense of the word, that is testing just everybody, that the person has to have a fever and some symptoms consistent with coronavirus, such as trouble breathing or other respiratory symptoms like a cough. And at least as of yesterday, they need to have had some contact with someone with a disease or travel. Now, it's really clear to me that that's going to change very soon. Once we have community spread, by definition, we're no longer going to limit it to people who have a known contact or known travel history. But you need to keep up with that through the Department of Public Health website, which also has material for clinicians, as well as through the CDC.
I have more details on what's happening in New Rochelle in New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that schools, houses of worship, and large gathering places will be shuttered for 2 weeks in a containment area centered in suburban New Rochelle. It is the heart of what appears to be the nation's biggest cluster of coronavirus cases. The state will send National Guard troops to help clean surfaces and deliver food in the area, a one-mile radius around a point near a synagogue connected to some existing cases. This, according to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. The state and a private health system are setting up a testing facility in the area. Schools within it will close for 2 weeks starting Friday, and state and local officials are working to determine large congregate facilities or gathering places that also will shut down. So, Dr. Eisenman, that the kind of thing you expect we will see more of?
Possibly. So what they have there is a epicenter of infection, and they're very concerned about whether it lives on hard surfaces in that area. So as I said, they're closing down all places that are open to the public, such as churches and other gathering facilities, and they're going to be doing a thorough cleaning of all of that. In addition, it sounds like they may be closing. Do they say if they're closing businesses?
I don't see that in the report, but it's certainly possible.
So I would be surprised if they close businesses. I think people still need to be able to go out to shop and get food. They may be going in and cleaning down those facilities and then reopening them. What I don't hear is that there's any limitation on the residents of that area from traveling in and out.
No.
So that's not a cordon sanitaire. That's a sort of a step before that. It's really a way of just cleaning down the area.
All right. We have another listener says, is it possible someone can be contagious with the virus but isn't experiencing or showing any symptoms?
Yes, unfortunately, there does seem to be some ability to spread the virus in the day before symptoms are experienced by people. Now, this is not common, but we do see in the data that there are some people who spread the disease in about the 24 hours before they start to feel fever, for instance. And that's a small percentage, in the single digits, I think.
All right. Anna in Mid-City asks, what precautions should people take when using public transportation?
Well, the problem is that the virus can live on hard surfaces for several hours, probably several days. So you really want to wash your hands down when you get into whatever you've touched. You know, if you've touched a pole on a subway or the door handle on a taxi, you want to wash your hands down as soon as you can. In between, if you can't get to a place to wash your hands, do not touch your face. If you have hand sanitizer, do it inside the car. And then when you get out of the car, do it again when you get out of the car. So, and all along, please do not touch your mouth, nose, or eyes.
All right.
And of course, if you're in a bus or train where there's somebody coughing, please move away.
All right, let's take another call. Eric in Jefferson Park, L.A., you're on Air Talk.
My biggest concern here is that we live in a democratic republic with a capitalist economy. China as we know, is communist, and they have much more control over their populace and quarantine. Italy is a democratic republic, but in a way they have old school values. Given our government and economic system, are we at a disadvantage in the United States? I spoke with my physical trainer just earlier. I said, what if you had to take 3 months off? He said, I'd be bankrupt. I don't know what I'd do. What are your thoughts on it?
Dr. Eisenman?
It's a very important question. We're seeing how the way we construct society runs up against the ways of containing this disease. So, for instance, the fact that we see reports of people who are getting tested for coronavirus who are then given a $1,000 bill. Or we hear of people who cannot stay away from work because they're temporary workers and they may lose their job. So we've set up a system that is opposed in some ways to really doing the kind of social distancing and getting the kind of health care we need. And I think this really does force some questions. For instance, it shows that having universal health insurance is really a security issue as much as anything else. If we don't know that everyone can get health care without any disincentive, we have no way of really protecting ourselves from these kinds of viruses when people don't go to the doctor.
There, of course, everybody does have access at the very least to the emergency room and will be seen there, even if you have to wait hours.
Yes, but going to the emergency room puts you at increased risk because you're near people. And if you're sick, puts the people in the emergency room at risk. So, you know, we're saying now with mild disease, we want people to stay at home and not spread it. I'm very concerned that the obstacles to getting care that have always been in our society, we do know that people don't get care for things all the time like hypertension and diabetes because of health insurance reasons, that those same blocks, those same obstacles are going to be a problem here.
I want to thank you so much, Dr. Eisenman, for being with us. We have so many more listener questions, but every day we're going to be talking about coronavirus, taking your calls, taking questions about it. That'll be part of what we do every day here on Air Talk. So my apologies, we couldn't take more listener questions, but our lines have just been jammed from the beginning till now. Dr. David Eisenman, UCLA Professor of Medicine and Public Health, he directs the university's Center for Public Health and Disasters. He's also a scientist at RAND. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. We'll be back in 90 seconds.